Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast, and I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. I hope my Abracadamits are having a good week so far. And I'll say this, if you've been knocked down, well, get back up. Keep striving. Keep shooting for those goals. You got 2021. We're going to own this year, baby. Go for it. Do your thing. There's been a lot of craziness on the old fake book this week, I've noticed. We've got some people that are outraged about the Mr. Potato Head name change. You know, my take on that is I don't care. I hadn't played with Mr. Potato Head since I was probably a small child. Well, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago I may have played with one. I don't know. But anyways, is and I'm going to say this on both sides of the fence. If you're offended by a name change of a toy, then dude, come on, man. You got way too much spare time. Find something else to be pissed off about. You know, that's just kind of stupid. And let's be honest, you know, Mr. Potato Head, Mrs. Potato Head, Potato Head. Potato Head's always been a little trans anyways, because you could switch in and out the lips and the eyes. And so Potato Head could be whatever Potato Head wanted to be. So there's that. And then also on the other side of the argument, if you think by changing the name of a toy is doing anything to help you and progress the way people are thinking, then you are being fooled by your own little agenda, okay? If you're trying to make a statement or move forward with society, that's not really the way you want to go. Also, the big stank on the fake book is Dr. Seuss books. Dr. Seuss is racist, apparently. I don't know. I haven't seen these books, so I haven't checked them out to see what racist images are inside these books. But once again, I haven't read a Dr. Seuss book since I was a child, or, you know, so I've got to say, you know, if you're upset about it, and maybe find some better things to be upset about. If, and another thing, once again, argument stands. If you think that this is going to change things, I think you're taking the wrong stance or the wrong approach. Let me put it that way. But then again, like I said, I haven't seen the images in the books. I don't know what they look like. I don't know how offensive they really are. I don't know. I haven't seen them. But I don't think, though, like, if there's like an AA for like former racists, there probably should be if there's not. But I can't see like a former racist standing in front of a crowd saying, "It all started when they taught me that the Who's from Whoville were the superior race." I don't think that's happening. I don't know. Who knows? I don't know. Anyways, I love everybody. I love you all. And also got to say, I love Will's Towing. That's right. This episode is brought to you by Will's Towing, located at 281 Oak Ridge Turnpike, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, 37830. Give Will a call for any of your towing needs at 865-272-5300. Now, I'm no mechanic, so my biggest fear is if my car does break down. And I promise you, if it happens, serving the Anderson County and Roane County area, you want to call Will Roberts at Will's Towing. Once again, that's 865-272-5300. This episode is also brought to you by The Grove Barbershop. Now, guys, if you needed a new kidney, you wouldn't try to operate on yourself, would you? Well, if you do, you're an idiot, okay? And you're probably going to die. Same thing with getting your hair cut. Don't try to cut your own hair. You don't want to die. So let Jeff Hackler take care of your hair and make you look good. At The Grove Barbershop, located at 98 Randolph Road, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, 37830. Also, make an appointment with Jeff. This is how easy it is at The Grove Barbershop. You go to thegrovebarbershop.com, make your appointment to see Jeff. You go in. It's clean, friendly, social distancing, just you and Jeff. He gets your hair looking nice and then out the door. and that's at grovebarbershop.com. Give Jeff a call today at 865-482-2210, The Grove Barbershop. All right, Abracadamets. I am super excited for this episode. You know, man, there's sometimes when you talk with folks and have interviews with people, the chemistry just clicks. It really does. And I feel like with this guest today, the chemistry really clicked. And he's got so many awesome stories and so many interesting things he talks about. He's not just a magician. He's an actor, an artist, and he's a consultant for the awesome television show, The Carbonaro Effect, which magicians and non-magicians love this show. So if you will, please sit back and relax and listen to my fun conversation with magician, actor, artist, and consultant for Carbonaro Effect, Chad Sanborn. All right, Mr. Chad Sanborn, how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Doing good. Well, welcome to the Abracadam podcast, man. I'm excited to have you here.
I am excited to be here. Thank you.
Well, I tell you what, Chad, if you don't mind, do you care to introduce yourself to the listeners and give them a little background about yourself?
All right. As you said, my name is Chad Sanborn. I've been doing magic for about 40 years now. So I've accumulated a lot of credits. I do some acting on the side when I'm not doing magic. And I've been the last, I guess, 7 years now, I've been a consultant on the Carbonaro Effect. So a lot of people kind of know me from that. They see me and, oh, you're the guy who was the statue that disappeared, that kind of stuff. So
that's definitely one of my favorite episodes. And I love that show. Absolutely love that show. Now, also, though, because on your website, I saw some, you know, you have some pictures of some of the television shows and work that you've done. Mm-hmm. Were you in the Fantastic Four? What was that about? I saw you in the Fantastic Four suit.
There was a local acting group. They're sponsored by the Cartoon Network. And we did some Fantastic Four things with them. So I was Mr. Fantastic, and I think you could probably find the episode online, and they added in all these special effects where my arms would stretch and reach stuff. It was really pretty neat. So
that's super cool.
And it was good to go somewhere at Turner Studios and film for the day. It was really neat.
So it was for Cartoon Network?
Yeah. I did a couple of things for Cartoon Network. I guess it's probably been 10 years now. I did this thing called Houndini. And which came, I guess, right after I did the Fantastic Four bit. They were like, oh, we have this magic thing that we want to do where a dog is sitting at a table and the dog is doing magic. So I went there. We had a creative meeting and we pitched how this whole thing would work. And basically, I'm hiding under a table. There's a table. My arms are through a shirt. So me and the dog are sharing the shirt. And my arms come through the sleeves like this, and I'm ducked under this table. I can't see anything that's up there. They gave me a monitor, but that was really confusing because the monitor was reversed. So if I move this way, it goes the opposite way. So I'm trying to do the cups and balls by feel up on top of this table with a dog attached to me. It was really a lot of fun, though.
So you were the hands for the dog.
I was the hands for the dog, yeah.
And it was a real dog.
It was an absolute real dog. So we did cups and balls, but instead of balls, we had these little dog biscuits made. So we did cups and balls, and at the end, we produced a big, giant biscuit from the cup. And then I kind of do a little flourish, and then the dog takes the biscuit and starts eating it, throws up all over, starts hacking up.
Oh, those my
are,
God,
that's
dude.
The glamorous side of magic and acting they don't tell you about. Some things throw up on you. While you're connected, there's nothing you can do. You're trapped there.
That is awesome. That's an awesome story. Gosh, I'm jealous of that story. Man. Apparently, I mean, like, you've done stuff with The Walking Dead. You've done plenty of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Walking Dead, the very first season, they were looking. I was working on another show as what's called a stand-in, and so the same person who booked that was booking extras for The Walking Dead, and they said we need extras and stand-ins, but for the first week, we're just going to use you as to be a zombie. So I had to go through zombie school, which was Greg Nicotero, who was in charge of all the special effects for the show. He was there, and we had to come up with our own kind of like zombie character, and they gave us a wardrobe to match the character. We had to learn how to kind of limp along and walk as a zombie. It was really a good experience. So in the first season, I think you see me as a zombie for like 3 or 4 shows. And then Irony Singleton, there's like a scene at the camp. They have like this camp, and the zombies come out of the woods and attack the camp. So Irony Singleton shoots me with a shotgun, boom, and I have to, you know, it was really good. This guy aiming a shotgun at you, and you feel this. It's like he shoots a powdered, some kind of charge. It doesn't have a bullet, but it does like make a flash out of the barrel. And it's just weird to have someone pointing a gun at you like that.
But that's super cool, too, because you're not just a zombie in the crowd. You're actually getting killed. You're getting blasted.
Right, right. You see me, yeah. For the most part, I'm just in the crowd kind of milling around. But that scene, you know, that was it. Then when they killed off my zombie, that was the end of my zombie days. I couldn't come back as a zombie. So,
okay, now, because this is interesting. What came first? Was it magic or acting?
Magic? Well, magic came first because I was a kid. I wanted to do magic. My parents said, you can't make a living doing magic. And I was like, all right, well, maybe I can make a living as an actor. And they're like, no, you can't make a living as an actor. I proved them wrong on both counts. I've done both. So my love of magic started way back in the late 70s, early 80s with David Copperfield when those TV specials first started. And back then he had that rivalry going with Doug Henning for a while. Like they each had a special each year. And it was, I guess David just kind of outlasted Doug in that he was more hip and modern. So that's where I kind of fell in love with magic watching that. And then I went the route of, I didn't give up on magic for a while, but I did kind of put it on the back burner, and I geared everything towards mentalism for a long time. And I liked The Amazing Randy. I started studying things like spoon bending and psychics and that kind of stuff. And so for a long time, I just did mostly mentalism and mental magic tricks. And then one day I was just thinking, you know, why not do magic? What's the difference between magic and mentalism? And I had this thought that I thought was brilliant, but I don't know. We'll see what you think. I thought a mentalist can tell you your dreams, but I already know my dreams. But a magician can make your dreams come true. And I thought that was a big distinction. So then I started getting back more into the magic side and putting mentalism on the back burner.
I really like that. That's a great little saying there, man.
It seems logical, but when you put a mentalist, a good mentalist, and a magician in the same room, the mentalist will almost always garner more applause and awes and oohs for whatever reason. It's just a little more impressive to people.
You know, there's something. Well, I think the odd thing about mentalism is, well, I mean, it's this one of the strongest forms of magic that anyone could possibly do. Right. And it's the also one of the other effects of magic that people can sometimes almost believe.
Right. Yeah,
because
people want to believe in mentalism for whatever reason. Even if you're telling them to write something down, you're just reciting back to them what they wrote down. There's something inherently amazing about that. I don't know what it is that something magic so far hasn't really been able to top. But I did watch In and of Itself with Derek Delgadio. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yes, I have. And it is amazing, by the way.
I watched it. They have it on Hulu now, so you can watch it, you know, if you have Hulu. And sadly, I didn't get to see the live show, which I can only imagine was that much better. But even on Hulu, he does some amazing things in that show. They border more on mentalism, I would say, but still, I don't know. He's touched you know, the sentiment in people when it's just, if you haven't seen it, anybody in the audience, go watch it. I think you'll love it.
You know, the thing I love about that show is, first of all, I mean, I know you've heard people say magic should be performed this way, that way. And, you know, however you perform your magic, but what he did was, you could take someone who can watch that show, his show, and be fooled by the magic, but they don't give a damn how he did it.
Right.
They don't care. They're so engulfed into the entire show. And that's how I was. I mean, like, you know, the brick. I think the brick was amazing, but I'm not like, how did he do it? I've got it. You know, no, I don't care. Right. Because
it's the story behind the brick that is really enrapturing. You know, and that the early David Copperfield, when he was more of a storyteller, I think he kind of touched on that a lot.
He
got away from it for a while. So,
well, you know, remember the baseball card, the Tournament Restored baseball card was such a beautiful piece by Copperfield. And, you know, I would love to see more magicians do that with their show. I would probably watch, you know, because I hardly ever watch magic shows. I hardly ever do, you know. And most of the time I can't stomach it. I'll just be honest. I'm like, you know. With, you know, my show, I try to accomplish things like that. You know, I'm a stand-up comic and magician, and I try to get people laughing and enjoying the magic, but enjoy the whole show enough to where they don't give a damn how I did something or that. But I mean, that's my goal, you know. I think every magician's goal, whatever style of magic, how you perform, should be that.
Yeah, that's true. I agree.
But definitely a great special. Let's talk about the Carbonaro Effect show, the show that I think is just an absolute masterpiece, man.
Thank you. We put a lot of work into it.
It is absolutely brilliant. Now, doesn't David Regal work with that show?
He does, yeah. He was part of the project before I was ever part of the project. So I'll say the only other person who's worked on more episodes of the show is Michael, because David dropped out for a season somewhere in there. And so, but I've worked on every episode except for the pilot. So that was the only one that I didn't work on, sadly. So the only person who has been on every season for every show other than the pilot is me. So I'm second fiddle there to Michael because obviously he had to be in every show.
Of course. Well, I mean, I think it's one of those things that you just like, first of all, I can't believe somebody hasn't thought of this before because it's just such a great idea. And because, I mean, what truly way how to mess with people and to get those reactions, you know, than like, you know, magic. So I think it's great. How, in any good stories, in anything, did any, I'm sure you got a ton. So let's hear something.
Let's see. Well, we were talking about the statue trick. So for that, we had to have a statue that looked like me, which I wasn't sure how we were going to do that. Where do you get a statue that looks like you? You know, where do you get a statue that's light enough that you can carry it around and we can do this trick with? So, luckily we had a really good props department. So they sourced they measured me from head to toe and they sourced some mannequins that were almost my exact same height and build and everything. So, and I had to go to the art department for a face mold. I don't know if you know anything about special effects and face molds, but they are terrifying. So you have to put these little straws in your nose and then they completely cover your face with this plaster mix that smells bad. And it goes in your ears. You can't hear anything. And so you just have to sit completely still while they cover you all over, head to, you know, they cover this much of me. So, and the only way to breathe is out of these little straws. And I just kept thinking that somebody was going to plug the end of the straws and I would suffocate. Something bad was going to happen. I don't know. It was, if you're claustrophobic, it's it was kind of terrifying. But I sat there. It took like 45 minutes to sit there and let it harden. But I sat there the whole time. It was good. It was a good experience. Would I do it again? No, I would not do it again.
You know, especially that episode right there. It's almost, now I know, you know, on TV things are done a little different, but still the reaction from the spectators, the misdirection and timing stuff has to be absolutely perfect. Right.
So, and stuff like that, when we do these big things, you would be really surprised at what you can get away with literally right behind someone's back. And we did it week after week on this show. We made a car disappear behind someone's back. It was in this tent and the guy is sitting 4 feet away from it. And it's right, literally, he could turn around and probably have touched the bumper on the front. And we just pushed it out of the back of the tent. There was like four people. We sneak in, we push the car out. He doesn't hear a thing. And then he sat there. And so you'll hear in that episode when it airs, you hear me call him on the radio and say, hey, how's the car doing? Because we wanted him to notice. He didn't look. He didn't hear us, obviously, sneak the car out. So he was like, oh, yeah, the car is great. But he still didn't look. I had to radio him like three or four times to get him. I finally said, I need something in the glove compartment. That got him up and moving, you know. And he looked, and that's when he freaked out. But he sat there 5 minutes with no car behind him. And to us, you know, we're watching on a monitor somewhere else, and we're just howling, laughing. It's just, that's like a whole nother show, is watching us react to these people.
That's what I was thinking. That would be my toughest thing, is because, you know, also, you know, as a magician, let's be honest, nothing that tickles you more whenever some of these reactions that you get from stuff. And
right.
That would be the hardest part, is just not, because I sit at home and I watch the show and, you know, I'm dying. I'm just laughing so hard, you know.
And you never, I mean, these are genuine reactions that people have. And of course, they're only going to show the best ones on TV. You do get some people that are kind of lackluster and we don't air them for obvious reasons. But for the most part, I would say good 85 to 90% of the people just act outrageous. Like, what is happening in my world today?
Have you had anybody like super really, really freak out?
We've had some people get scared, and a couple of times Michael, like somebody would get so scared, Michael would calm them down by saying, you're on a TV show. I'm sorry. It was a prank. We didn't want you to go crazy. We were filming at an airport in the middle of the night. They closed down one of the wings. So we're in this airport and they're supposedly going through all this empty baggage and they come across this crate. So inside the crate is a giant raven, and the raven ends up turning into a guy. Well, when the bird turns into a guy and the guy comes out of that crate, like the first guy we had, he ran out of the building through the parking lot, ran to his car and drove away.
Oh,
he was gone. There was no getting him back. There was no ending to it. There was nothing. It was like, okay, send in the next person, I guess.
That guy's got a hell of a story. No one's going to believe him though.
But that's, you know, that's happened a few times. People freak out so bad that you have to kind of put the brakes on. But a lot of times, Michael, when we think it would go too far, Michael was, he has this demeanor, something about him. You know, I always said he could talk a cop out of, into writing his own self a ticket. You know, he has that gift of gab that a lot of people don't have. So he could always walk these people right up to a ledge and then pull them back and then push them back there again and then bring them back to get these reactions. He was fantastic with it. So
that is brilliant. Now, so because the show is getting, you know, it's a pretty popular show. Right. Has Michael, is he running into any problems where people recognize him and he may have to like wear a disguise? Or I see sometimes he'll dress up, but is he having to do that more and more now?
Yeah, he does have to wear a disguise. That's one of the reasons why we started heading in that direction with the disguises. So every season when we film, when we're there, and we have been filming in Chicago, so we would always go there like 2 weeks early to write ideas and do all that stuff. And one of his duties then is to pick out disguises that he wants to wear. So we have a costume person who comes in and they put on wigs and pick out outfits for that. Like when you go to a store that sells herbal cigarettes and whatever, so you have to have like a long hair hippie kind of guy. So he does do a good job of matching the character that he wants to be to the location, which is really nice.
That's, I mean, because, you know, I was thinking there's only so much that you can do of these shows, and then before people do start, you know, start recognizing.
And you know what gives them away the most is, because sometimes he'll get recognized even in a disguise, is his voice. When he starts talking to people, that voice, something sounds really trigger memories in people. And so they hear him talk and they go, oh, I know who you are. You're that guy who does magic on TV.
Let's get back to you, because I want to ask you, like I said, you are a very talented guy. You're a fantastic magician and a great actor. And you know what, folks listening to this podcast, Chad is, you know what else he is? He's a handsome son of a gun too, you know? So
that's genetics. I had nothing to do with it. Thank my mom.
Well, I mean, you know, of course they want to kill the best looking zombie. So, but let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, man. Okay. You're a magician. You're an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you love more?
I love magic more. It's been a part of my life longer than acting has. And there's an interaction when you're doing, like if you're doing a close-up trick for somebody, you get that feedback, that applause. And you just have this whole, when you're in a magic zone, if you're working restaurants or you're doing a theater show, when you're in the zone and you get one with an audience, that's amazing feeling. And no actor is ever going to get that feeling, because acting is so staged. All your lines are pre-scripted. All your actions are pretty much pre-scripted. And you're shooting in short little segments and you're doing the same thing over and over again from different camera angles to get it all in. And it's so contrived, and there's no one there to applaud for you when you're done. So you just don't get it. Everybody's actually annoyed that it's taking so long because they got another shot to get to. That's what everybody's thinking about. You know, when's lunch? That's kind of how the acting world goes. You don't get the instant gratification and feedback that you would when you do magic. So,
well, you know, there's
but nothing acting like pays more. So,
oh yeah. <There's that. laughs> I'm sure that helps, by the way. But you know, I say it all the time, I'm addicted to standing on stage in front of individuals and entertaining them. And
right.
I'm going to do it as long as I possibly can. You know, I'm going to be old and crusty and still up there trying to do things. So that's cool. But and right now, as far as like with the thing that was going, you know, everything going on with COVID and stuff, you know, all live entertainers have been, you know, impacted.
Right.
But the television show has impacted some too, correct?
That is correct. Only recently, within the last couple of months, have things started to film again. And you have to go through so many hoops to have your, like, 3 times a week, everybody in your production has to get tested. And it doesn't matter who it is, whether it was an extra, a stand-in, or an actor, or a grip, or like, it doesn't matter. As long as one person tests positive, then you have to shut down and wait a week, and then you can all start back up again. So it's really messed some people up. So
that could, I'm sure. And I'm sure They're not paid that week, are they?
No.
No.
Of course not.
They don't have the luxury of those nice corporate American jobs.
That's right.
So, okay, well, another thing on your website, and let me also plug the website real quick, which before we get off here, I'll let you, you know, you can definitely plug some things. Is it chadsanborn.com? Is that
that's
the website?
It, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got some pretty cool pictures on there with, I saw, a fella that may have you beat in the handsome department there, pal, Mr. John Stamos. What was that?
Oh, yeah. I was John Stamos's stand-in on a TV show called Necessary Roughness, I think it was. It came on the USA Network, and it ran for like 5 seasons or 6 seasons. So John Stamos, talk about a handsome man. That guy, he looks – the way you see him in pictures is the way he looks in real life. Like, fresh face in the morning, no makeup really required. He's just got this natural tan glow.
And doesn't age.
Perfect hair. Yeah, he does not age. And I don't think he's ever had any plastic surgery. You know, sometimes you can tell when people have had work. Nope. I think he's just great genetics. So, but super nice guy. And the first couple of days that he was on set, he was kind of quiet. You know, when you're working on a TV show or a movie, you see the same people all the time. You're like, a TV show may run for, it usually takes a week to film a 1 hour TV show. So for 5 days, you're filming the same episode. So you see those people, if you have a 20 episode run, then you have 20 weeks to film those 20 episodes. So you see the same people day in and day out for those same 20 weeks, and you're together 12, 14 hours a day, sometimes 16 hours a day. And so you really become this tight-knit family. You eat together all at the same time. And so his first couple of days, I think he was new. He had never worked on the show before, and everybody else had been there through all the other seasons. So I sent him a tweet on Twitter. I tweeted to him and just to see if he would respond. So after lunch one day on like day three, he was like, you wanted a picture with me. I saw it on Twitter. And he was like, come over here and take a picture with me. So then everybody started coming over and taking pictures with him. But I think that was great because it kind of broke the ice and he was no longer this famous John Stamos, you know, kind of people put him on this pedestal. And I think that kind of made him seem a little more every day, which was good.
That's super cool. And it's always nice when you meet somebody like that and they, you know, turns out that they are, you know, a down
to earth. Really nice guy.
Yeah, nice guy. Really nice guy. I always kind of, you know, hold this rule, never meet more. All my heroes are dead. So now I can't meet them, you know. But I have met some people and they've turned out to be douchebags. And, right. You know, I've worked with super famous comics and celebrities and I've also, I don't want to drop his name, but it was a movie that we all watched in the 80s as children and a very famous movie. And I was excited to meet this guy and it was at a Fanboy Expo. Let me just put it that way. And I was performing at the Fanboy Expo. So I was there early before there was any lines, you know, people and stuff. So I was like, well, my show don't start till, you know, I've got 20 minutes. I got to go talk to him because, you know, I love that movie. And right. I went talk to him and he turned out to be the biggest douche. And even if he was just having a bad day or he, you know, who knows what was going on in his life, it still sucked, you know?
Right.
So
when you have this, you want them to be a certain way and then they turn out to not be that way. It's kind of disheartening. Yeah, I get it.
And so now when the movie comes on, I'm just kind of
like, you're like, maybe I'll change the channel.
but that's super cool, man. When I saw the John Stamos pick, I was like, wow, that is really, really cool.
Yeah, he was really good. You know who I met that was really awesome and loves magic is Jason Sudeikis. He got his start when I met him. We were filming a movie called Hall Pass, and I was his stand-in and photo dope. So there's a couple of scenes in that movie where they shoot him. It's not really him. It's actually me, because we were the exact same height. We looked the same. It was amazing how close together we looked. So he was doing Saturday Night Live still at the time.
That is so cool.
On Wednesdays, he would fly to New York and do a rehearsal and then come back in time to shoot for Thursday's movie day. And then on Saturdays and Sundays, he would be in New York City and come back early on Mondays. So a couple of times on Mondays and on Wednesdays, his scenes, I would do the lines and they would shoot from the back. So you couldn't tell. And then they would just ADR his lines in over top. But somebody still has to say them in the scene. You know? So that would be my job. And I got to know him pretty well. And we did magic all the time on that set. We did this little two-person code, and he would say, hey, what is John thinking of? You know, and instantly I would know, because we had this whole code worked out. It was really good. So one day we were doing card tricks, and Christina Applegate was also in the movie. And nice. She comes over, she goes, I'm going to show you guys the greatest magic trick you've ever seen. And we're like, all right. She takes the cards, kind of spreads them out in this haphazard fan, and she says, pick one. So I chose one, whatever it was. And then she says, put it back wherever you want. So I put it back wherever I wanted. And she closes the fan and gives it a real shuffle. And so me and Jason are just sitting there, and we know magic. So I know he's more famous as an actor, but he knows quite a bit about magic. And we are thinking, there's no way. It wasn't a force. She didn't control the card. So there's no way she's going to find this card. And when she finds this card, that's going to be amazing. She puts the deck of cards on the floor. She takes off her shoe and her sock and starts flipping through the cards with her toes, blink, blink. And then she just kicks them across the floor and says, I can't do no magic. Oh, we just howled laughing.
Oh my God, that is great. No magic.
She had us going, just leading us on.
You had me going with the story. I was like, what is she going to do?
It was perfect. She set us up, man. And just knocked us down.
Gosh, dude, that is super. Okay, now I've seen Hall Pass, but now, Chad, I got to go back and watch Hall Pass and stare at the back of Jason Sudeikis' head and be like, Chad.
Is that Chad or is that it? There was a couple times when I watched it in the theater, I'm like, wait, that was just me. I didn't even realize it was me. They edit together so well.
That is so awesome, man. Okay, well, let me ask you this, okay? Because on Abracadam, especially with any entertainer, we always have to ask a hell gig story. Ooh. What is either acting or magic, either one, anyone you want to share?
You know, a hell gig. I've been lucky.
Now, a dog barfing all over the place.
That could be so... Did I tell that while we were on the air or before?
I believe we told that on the air, I believe. Okay.
So, yeah, that was kind of bad, being thrown up on by a dog. I can't really think of anything that's...
Well, have you done any crazy magic shows at any, like, just hell holes?
Yeah, I used to do a lot of burlesque shows. So.
Oh, yeah, those burlesque. Me too. Yeah.
There, you know, there's a lot of drunk people at burlesque shows. So a lot of the things that I would do, you know, as you're the variety act in between the women. So you have to mostly be funny and that kind of stuff. And so I perform more like Teller from Penn and Teller. I don't speak and I try and mime everything. And if I want to say something, then I'll write it down so people can see it. Or I already have a pre-printed card with something on there that kind of shows my thoughts or helps narrate the story on stage. So I was doing this trick and it's time to music. So from the getting the person in the audience, I know I have X amount of time to get to the stage, put them in the chair and get everything set up. to stay in time with the music. Well, this guy, he doesn't know that. And I'm trying to get him on stage. He was a lot more inebriated than I had realized. And so he finally gets on stage and I'm still right in line. Like I can still get in line with my music if I have to. But then he undoes his pants, pulls his pants down and just stands there in his underwear with his arms out like this for everybody to see. I'm like, okay, I just do one of these numbers. Like, he got a good round of applause for that. And then I made him sit down with his pants down around his knees.
Wow.
So, that's... yeah, that was.
those burlesque shows, like, now, you know, I used to work on one, the Ooh Ooh Review show, and I had some, now I'll be honest, I had some great times on that show because it, every show would sell out, and
right,
it was a variety burlesque, and you know, I would do my magic, and they would be singing, all kinds of stuff, and you get a chance to meet some very talented people, you do, but then also really some of those audience members are after.
Something else. I don't know. But it's a good place to mingle because it would always surprise me the mix of people in the audience. You would get, sometimes you would always get, you have your hardcore fans who come to a lot of shows and you get to know them. But then you have corporate people that would come in suits and ties or right from work, dressed real nice. It was it was always a good mix of people in the audience. If you play it right, and you keep your stuff semi-clean on stage, you can always book other gigs from those shows.
You sure can. You know, I've gotten work off of those shows. And a lot of routines that I do now, I would almost use those shows like a chance to practice and work out some,
another thing. You can be bad in those shows. So if you have a new routine and you just want to try it out, for anybody who's starting out magic and you want a place to just go, and it doesn't matter if you're really good or bad, you may not get paid a lot, but that's a good place to go break in an act and keep trying it week after week. Cause a lot of times they would be like every weekend they would have a show. And so you could just go and just every weekend work on this one routine or something.
Absolutely.
And suck until you get it right.
That's right, man. I mean, you know, like I said, a lot of things were born during those days for me. So,
yeah.
Well, here, let's do this. You know what, man? Before we get out, hold on. We're going to do some magic. I'm going to do some. Chad, you brought up mentalism. And first of all, I love the 13 steps. Gosh, I love that back there in the background. If you guys can't see this, Chad has.
Let me point this out. You see this? This is, these are all three posters that I designed. Because one of the reasons why I had such longevity in the Carbonaro effect is not because I did magic. It helps that I do magic. But magicians as consultants are kind of a dime a dozen. But what most people don't know is that I have an art degree. So I can draw, I can paint, and I can sculpt, which came in handy immensely when you need a certain kind of magic prop built just a certain way or... so I was always like a go-between between the art department and the magic team to get things made right and help design stuff like that. So just in my spare time, I decided one time I'm going to start recreating what if magic tricks had posters like your movies do. So I came up with this design for Bobo's Modern Coin Magic. Which is, that's not the original art. I mean, this is my original art, but it's not the one that came with the book. So, and then this is my riff on the 13 steps.
So good, dude.
And this one, I know it's got a reflection, but it's Ricky J's card, just weapons. And it's got it's like a Western theme, and there's a guy throwing a card, and he's killed the other guy with the card.
I love that, dude. Yeah, I love those, man. You know, the 13 steps right off the bat, I was looking, I was like, oh my God, that's gold.
Yeah. It's so good,
That is
so good. That was one I'm really proud of. It took a while to get that design right. 13 steps, how do you portray that? You know?
Yeah, no, that's perfect.
It's the guy, he's blindfolded coming down, like taking steps.
That is perfect. That is awesome, man. Now, do you sell any of your art on your website or anything? Or
not yet, but for the last few weeks, I've been working on adding a store. It's just not live yet. But if you keep checking back, probably within a week, it should be up and ready to go. And I will have all these for sale on there.
Well, that's super cool, dude. I love that. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to show you a magic trick. This is,
sure.
For, you know, the worst people to do magic for is magicians, but hell, you know, we're going to do it. But here we go. We're just going to test. We're going to test Chad's mentalism out. Okay. And this is horrible, by the way. Here we go. This is going to be horrible. But, and here I'm kind of, you know, I'm like Howie Mandel. All right, bro. Kind of OCD. Okay. But how many fingers am I holding up behind my back, Chad?
Three.
I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, I know you guys can't see this right off the bat, but Chad absolutely nailed this. I have three fingers right here behind my back. That's it. That's three. Yeah. It's Chad's zombie arm, folks, from The Walking Dead. This is the actual arm. You see, there's, whoa. Take it.
That was awesome. You said it was going to be bad. That was pretty good.
You want to see it? You want to see it, an old gag I did used to do, though?
Sure, yeah.
It's just an old gag.
that's the oldest kind right there.
That's the oldest kind right there.
I think I've done that one a few times.
I tell you what, let's do this. Okay. The Abracadam podcast, Chad, we ask the tough questions.
All right.
Okay.
Ask away. Shoot.
And it's absolutely impossible to get away from politics in this day and age. You know it and I know it. You can't get away from it. So I got to ask you a tough question.
Okay.
I'm going to get political. What television character do you think would make a great president? The character, not the actual person.
What character would make a great president?
Somebody who you would vote for without even thinking twice.
I would absolutely that's a good question. I would vote for the original character from Die Hard, that, what's his name, please? Bruce Willis.
McClane.
An average Joe. He played John McClane.
John McClane. I said
right.
McCain.
An average Joe cop from New York City turning into a president. That would be a dream come true. Just a no nonsense kind of guy who would give it to you straight.
McClane. Dude, I think he, you know what though, dude? He would be a badass president. I agree.
He wouldn't take crap from other countries, you know. He would be like, hey, this is what we're going to do. And if you don't like it, too bad. You know? I think that would be great.
And I mean, just like whenever you would think like there's no way, you know, we're screwed, he would pull it out in the end, you know.
Right.
And his vice president could be the cop or the security guard guy. Wouldn't it the what is it? He's the dad from that one sitcom show in the 90s. What's his name? I can't remember his name.
The guy who played Al in that movie. Yeah, I can't remember his real name. I know
he was Urkel's in the Urkel show.
Urkel's dead. Yes, show. And he was a cop in that show, right?
Dude, I think that's an awesome choice. I think I would vote for John McClane. It was John McClane, right?
Right, John McClane. Yeah.
John McClane. I think I would definitely, I would vote for him. Yeah, it's
and pretty much kind of any character that Samuel L. Jackson plays is going to always be that kind of no nonsense.
Yeah.
He may say the wrong things like in a gruff way, but he means well. I think that's kind of, I would vote for almost any of his characters too.
Yeah, it's hard not to like, you know, pretty much all anything Samuel L. Jackson does. And it's almost like he's almost somewhat the same character in every movie.
Right.
You know? But it's one of those things that you're okay with. You love it. And it's, you know, it's also, you know, who else is like that? Who is killing it right now, by the way, is Jason Bateman.
Yeah. But, you know, he's a great actor and a really nice guy. but I don't, I think he would give in too easy as a
president. Yeah, yeah.
he would politic too much, and I don't like politics. Like,
well, I'm trying to, Ozark. I'm a big fan of Ozark. I love
Ozark is great. You know, that's filmed around here.
Oh, Ozark. It is?
Yeah.
Super cool, man. They're filming everything down there now. Everything.
That's right.
That's which
that's
is
weird because cool. Sometimes I'm driving along, I'm like, oh wait, that was from this show or that show. I forgot that was filmed here. Yeah.
Now, you know, this was funny because I actually put my hat in for a consulting gig on a television show. And I guess it was coming down to crunch time. They were talking to me back and forth. And I was like, hey, man, I think I'm going to get this gig. It's going to be really cool. And I didn't hear anything back. Well, I had a magician on here, a friend of mine. And do you know Chris Dixon, Doc Dixon?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Doc's on the Dangum Show, and we're sitting here, you know, and Doc's blah, 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 blah. And
oh, he got your job.
Got the gig. So, and so you can hear me on live, you know, through the action. That's when I'm finding out I didn't get the gig, you know.
Oh,
so.
Gosh.
I'm like, oh, that's hilarious. Thanks, Doc. You know, but no, so that's definitely interesting. And I know, you know, they do a lot of stuff down there because it was to be in Atlanta where it was going on. Let me ask you, because, you know, I know people, other actors. Do you, before we get out of here, any advice on people trying to get work as an actor?
Yeah, you know, I would have never broke into it if I hadn't been doing burlesque shows. Because after a show, this guy came up to me and he was like, hey, you're great. You're funny. You make great facial expressions. Do you do any acting? And I said, I've always wanted to, never really knew where to start. He gave me a card. He says, I'm a casting director. Let me get you on a set as an extra so you can see what it's like. And I was like, okay. So a couple days go by and I find myself on the set of a show called Drop Dead Diva. And it was a USA show. It aired for 4 seasons, I think. And my very first day on a TV show. So I'm sitting there as an extra, not knowing what to expect. I showed up early. They gave me a free breakfast. It was like a buffet, all you can eat. They cook you an omelet. So they treat you really nice. And I'm just waiting. And so this guy comes over. He's wearing all this like gear, walkie-talkies and batteries everywhere. And he's got a thing in his ear. And he goes, he's pointing at me, like standing behind me. And he goes, is this the guy? And they were like, yes. And he said, okay, come with me. And so from that day, I went from being an extra to being a stand-in. And that's like, I got double the pay and I got treated even nicer. And I got to eat the really good food. So my first day on set, I went from a nobody just milling around in the background to suddenly standing in for an actor who's there. As a stand-in, you're just there for when they light the scene, basically. But it's critical because if the lighting's wrong, then the actor's going to look bad. So they always look for somebody who's the right height, the right hair color, that kind of stuff, right complexion. And if you're looking to break in, go to someplace that does extras casting and see if you can get on as an extra, because if nothing else, you'll be in the background. You can be a blur going through some movie or TV show, but you'll see everything that goes on a set. So a lot of people think that if you're not the millionaire star of the show, then you're not worth being on the set, you know, but that's not true. There's thousands of jobs in production. There's the extras, the stand-ins, there's grips and electricians and ADs and camera people. All these things are going on, production assistants. So there's an art department and so many different jobs. And as an extra, you'll have a lot of free time so you can see what all these jobs do. So nobody wants to be an extra for their life, but you can maybe pick another job that you would like to be. And then you go talk to them. You can talk to anybody on set. So that's the great thing about it. You have access to all these people with all these talents. And you can just freely go up to them and say, hey, tell me about your job. And they will. They're more than happy to.
That's super cool.
And so that's where I would start. Your local city probably films commercials, local commercials, and there's going to be some camera or some kind of small group that does those things. See if you can intern with them. You may not get paid to start with, but you'll get experience, which is equal to paying sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. Well, same thing first starting out in performing. You know, a lot of times, you know, those first shows, you're not making anything. You know, you're just doing it for
exposure. But you're gaining the experience. Yeah. You gain the experience of being in front of people. You find out what works, what doesn't work. So.
Absolutely. And, well, I tell you what, the time has just flown by, and you know, I have this has been fun. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Before we get out of here, do you got anything that you could talk about coming up, or where can people, you know, when you do get the store ready for the artwork and your website, stuff like that?
Yeah, just check the website. I really have nothing other than trying to get the art up and running. I started putting things that I was drawing and painting on Instagram, and people started saying, hey, would you sell this? And I was like, yeah. So I haven't sold any magic stuff, but I paint other things, you know, besides magic. I do a lot of watercolors of flowers and those kind of things. And so people have been buying it. And then someone said, you should create a store and sell these things. So
absolutely. You should, man. This is wonderful. I know magicians would buy that up just like that. Have you thought about doing any t-shirts?
I hope so. We'll see.
Have you thought about doing any t-shirts and having some of the artwork on t-shirts?
No, I haven't. But maybe I'll print some and just to get the photos to put on the website and see how it goes. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I tell you what, I can't wait to watch the newest season of Carbonaro Effect. And I tell you what, Chad, this has been a blast, brother. Thank you so much for coming on the Abracadam.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed being here. You're great to talk to. And hopefully someone out there learned something today.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure they did, man. I'm sure. And now everybody listening is going to go watch Hall Pass. They're going to be watching the statue episode of Carbonaro, you know. So.
Oh, the last movie I was in, let me tell you about this. So I was in a movie called, what was it called? I don't know, but it's in my credit somewhere. So I doing magic for John Cena.
John Cena. So you're in a movie with John Cena.
I'm in a movie with John Cena. So the scene was, I'm supposed to be showing him this trick. It's just thumb tip, you know, make a handkerchief disappear. And then he gets belligerent and we get into a fight. So there's a stunt choreographer there, this whole thing. So I'm doing this trick. And the first time we during rehearsals, I do the trick and I make it disappear. And he's like, what? He freaked out because he had no idea how it worked, you know? And he was like, he took a couple steps back. And he was like, I was the devil there for a minute. He had no idea what was happening. So then I was like, you know, as part of this fight, he's supposed to call out what's happening. But I think when the handkerchief vanished so cleanly, he was taken aback and he just kind of lost that. He was out of the scene for a second. So I'm like, look, it's just fake thumb. It goes in there. So when we fight, you yell fake thumb and you hit me and knock the thumb tip off. You know, that was kind of the instigate. Then I push him and then we do this whole thing. So we film this whole scene. I'm done. And I can't wait for the movie to come out. And I am actually on the first time I saw it, I was on a plane traveling for Carbonaro. We were going to a show, Missouri, I think. And the movie is on the plane. So I'm watching it. And my scene is in the very first like 5 seconds. And you only see me from the back making a thumb tip disappear. And, or, you know, I'm doing this. And you just kind of catch the tail end of it. And that's it. The rest of it's gone. They cut out the fight, the whole thing. It was kind of a bummer, but I still have the memory and it lives on. So.
That is super awesome, man. what a hell of a story to roll out on, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You got.
I can't think of what the movie's called, but we'll look it up.
You got to fight John Cena and you fooled him with the old thumb tip.
That's right. Absolutely. It's amazing. Those old gems still work, you know.
The greatest
there's people out there who don't know.
Yes. Dude, that is super awesome. Once again, Chad, man, this has been awesome, brother. And I tell you what, we will be doing a YouTube channel to where it's, you know, video. So, hell, we got to have you come back on, man. Absolutely.
Oh, sure. That would be fantastic. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Chad. Thank you so much, man. And I can't wait to talk to you again.
Yes, definitely. Have a great night. Thank you.
All right, guys, that was such a fun interview and so many cool stories from Chad, man. I'm so jealous of his stories. He's got some of the best stories I've heard yet. So some really good stuff. I hope you guys did enjoy that. I do want to say thank you guys for subscribing and following to the Abracadam Podcast. Please keep spreading the word. Tell your friends. Give us a review wherever you listen to us at. Give the Abracadam Podcast a review. That I would love to hear your feedback about the podcast. Shoot me a message with any questions, any ideas. I will definitely get back with you. And like always, Abracadamits, thank you for listening. Abracadam.